My task that I was given was to give you 5 ways to kickstart a youth ministry. And there's a lot of different directions we could go there, but I picked out 5, and hopefully those 5 will help you kind of, you think about evaluating your work and your youth ministry, and many of these principles can apply to any ministry within the church. How many of you have a job where you are evaluated on a regular basis? Quite a few. You hear about it all the time. There's certain types of evaluations. I know as a preacher, I appreciate positive and negative comments I get from members or whoever it might be. Sometimes those negatives are difficult to take. Unless it has to do with my looks, which I can do nothing about. I don't mind somebody saying I couldn't hear you or I didn't understand this or can you touch on this a little more when you preach or teach. Things that I can do, and I take it as constructive criticism. When we think about youth work, it's no different. We have to be able to look at it and evaluate it to make sure that what we're doing is really helpful to our young people and also their parents. And I don't know what you consider youth work. Some just consider that from junior high to high school. But in every congregation, it should involve young kids too. Because hopefully they have, if you do anything with your teenagers, hopefully the young kids in your congregation have that attitude, I can't wait to be a part of an older youth group where they can go to things like Discipleship U or to camp and so forth. And hopefully you develop that within a congregation. We talked last night, some of you were here, and I thought I'd point this out. Some of the things that I pointed out last night, I know every congregation is unique. I know I met 2 ladies and they had 6 girls that came with them. They don't have a lot of boys at their congregation. That's a very unique situation. But there are some things they could probably do that you might not be able to do where you have a mixture of boys and girls. For example, they said when they go out to eat, usually a boy in most congregations would lead a prayer, but they have all girls. And so they have kind of a unique perspective of being able to teach their young ladies how to lead a prayer. And that really carries over when they teach a Bible class as they get older or when they're in a woman's retreat or, you know, when women get together. So again, that's unique. But every congregation is unique. Some have a lot of young people, some don't, and I understand that. Hopefully the things we're going to talk about this morning will help, no matter how large, how small your youth group might be, whatever your role is within the church. And the first of these that I like to point out as far as how to kickstart it is you got to have care. You can't get away from, you know, if you're a youth minister, you have to develop a deep care for the young people of the church. And if there's any word you could start with, that would be one of them. And you think about Jesus' example, and we know that he was a very caring, very compassionate Lord. He had a big heart for those that were in need, even those that didn't follow him. Think about how he addressed his feelings toward Jerusalem when they wouldn't follow him, right? And it's obvious that he cared for the people. Even though they didn't follow him, he wanted them to, and he cared for them. And he was distressed, if you will, about their spiritual condition. And so we know Jesus definitely cared for those that he loved. And that would include all men, especially when we think about within the church. We should definitely have a deep care for our young people. Now you wonder, well, why do I even have to point that out? Surely we would be people that care. But there are those that kind of sometimes with their attitude and they have, they're just doing this because nobody else will. Do you think kids can pick that out? I know they can. I've been around teenagers too long. When they have a teacher that doesn't really care, they can, like we talked about last night, that is unprepared, and kids can pick that out. If they believe a leader in the church, whatever, doesn't care about them. And so we really need to develop that heart of Jesus and that compassion and care that Jesus showed toward all. And again, he didn't just show care and compassion toward his disciples or those that followed him faithfully, but he did have a deep care for his fellow Jews and all those that were considered sinners. He cared for all of those that he came in contact with, those that were his enemies. What are we told to do? Love our enemies? And so, you know, again, if there's anything that we could do within the church as workers among our youth is really develop a care and compassion toward each one of them. And there's a lot of ways we can do that. Sometimes you hear someone make an accusation against a church. Well, they're not very caring. They're not very compassionate. What do we usually do when we hear that? If we're a faithful member, usually we're on the defensive. But again, if we really think about what that individual is saying, maybe they have run into some in the church that weren't very caring and didn't come across very compassionate. And hopefully we can take from that that we need to go an extra step at showing care and compassion toward that individual. I know one of my elders is here. I tell them all the time, if there's somebody in the church that ever has something that they don't like about me, or they feel like I've slighted them in any way, maybe I didn't shake hands going out the door on Sunday, I want to know about it, because I want to be able to not confront that person at all, but really take special effort to give them some attention, because we all know there are those in the congregation that need a little more attention than others, right? And there are some, they can walk by you every Sunday, you say hi, and they're good. And there are some that if you don't shake their hand or give them a hug, they're going to be offended. And that's just how we're made as individuals. And we have to understand that about each other. But it really helps us to know. And young people are the same. You know, young people want to know that we definitely care about them. And care is not just in a sermon. It's not just in a class like this. One of the passages I think of is 1 John chapter 3. Verses 17 and 18 says, if anyone has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet closes his heart against them, how does God's love abide in him? And then he says, little children, let us not love in word or talk, but in deed and truth. And so, you know, hopefully a lesson like this or a class that you might teach on care and compassion isn't just talk, as is pointed out in 1 John here, but it's also in action. And I believe that, you know, anybody that is working among our youth needs to come across with an attitude and a caring, compassionate heart. I think my job as a preacher, we have a youth minister that spends a lot of time with our young people, but every preacher, you know, I've always heard with preachers, one of the secrets of really having people appreciate you maybe a little more, spend time with babies and the older members, right? Most preachers have heard that. But young people are right in there. You know, spend time talking to them on Sundays, getting to know them. Sometimes they congregate as a group, but ask them how their week's going, see what they're involved in. And that goes a long way. And if you truly care about them, they know and they understand that. One of the best examples of care in Jesus' life would have been in his dealings with Zacchaeus. Who was Zacchaeus? Tax collector, right? Someone Jews didn't like, and someone that might not have been talked to by most of those teachers of his day, of course. But where did Jesus go with him? Not only met him and talked to him, but he went to his house, right? And so again, you find that attitude of Jesus, and as we pointed out last night, that's just the nature of God, to be a compassionate and caring God. And surely as Christian men and women that work with our youth, we have to develop that care and compassion. You know, I was thinking about this. My older son and his wife have been, they take care of children. They're, foster parents. I'm sorry, the word slipped me. I'm throwing this in without it. They're not in my notes. But they've been foster parents for about 3 or 4 years. And they've had at least 3 little babies that they've taken out of the hospitals that have been in really rough situations. And taken them home, cared for them for about a year. And then those children are given back usually to their parents or someone in the family and all. And you think about it at that age, how difficult that is. And some may have grown up in that situation where you're a foster child and where you go from home to home to home. And how difficult that is on young people. And I know in our churches sometimes, in a way, it's difficult when they go from one youth worker to another one to another one. They all may be caring, but it's hard. You establish a strong bond with those individuals. When preachers go from one church to another, it happens in a congregation, doesn't it? When a preacher goes and spends a year or two and then goes on another year or two and another year or two, you don't really develop those bonds that are very strong. You cannot get to know a congregation in a year or two. It just can't happen. Some of you are preachers. How long, the ones that have been there the longest, how long have you been there? Can I ask? 9 years. And how long did it take, do you think, to really get to know the congregation?
Probably four or so before they started to really believe that we were sticking around.
Yeah, definitely. I've heard that 3, 4, 5 years sometimes. And if you've been blessed to be at a congregation that long, I've been at Weber for 26 years, so we kind of know all the kids that have grown up from when they were babies. And I think that's kind of a unique situation. But it really does take time to develop those bonds. But it's hard for kids to have those leaders and those ripped away from. That's where a congregation can help. And if you do go through preachers like that, a congregation with a lot of parents and youth workers and the older members that really take time to care for the young people, they still establish those bonds with the members of the congregation. It's not just a couple individuals. So, you know, think about that when we think about having great care for our young people.
Can I say one thing?
Yes. Right. 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 That's a good point. Right. Right. And that's a great point you make. And, you know, I, from a little experience I had, I was at one place for about a year and a half, and that was hard on the kids that were at that congregation that I left in Arkansas. And I remember some of them were upset because we left. And some of you that have moved know how that is. And we felt bad about that, but it was a better move for, I know, our family at the time. But there is great benefit when you're around them a long time. And a congregation is what I'm talking about. Sometimes you can't help that as a minister. You have to move for family or for whatever. But a congregation can help offset those things when they really do care about the young people of the congregation. Okay, the second thing. How do you get close to someone? It's by spending time with them, right? Very few people. I had grandparents that were married for over 60 years before my grandfather passed away. They knew each other 3 weeks and they were married. And they were married for 60-some years. That's pretty rare, right? It's pretty rare. Usually, you get close to the one you marry by spending a lot of time with that, with whoever that might be, your husband or your wife. And, you know, when you think about young people, the only way that you can really have an effective youth work is time. And I don't believe there's any other way around it. You have to spend time, and it can only be done by spending time together. Last night, I pointed out there's something about a trip you might take, whether it's a trip to camp or on a mission trip or coming to DU or a retreat or a youth rally you might go to. There's something about spending time, I said, in a van, a smelly van with a bunch of kids, and there is. They really bond over time. I know we've gone on trips that are 10, 12 hours, and the adults usually aren't too excited about sitting in a van that's not very comfortable. But I know from experience, the kids that I've talked to, those were some of the best times they remember as they were growing up, spending time like that together. Think about camp. Who goes to a camp that's only air-conditioned everywhere? There's a few like that, but not outside, not in Texas, right? As hot as it is and uncomfortable as those beds are for adults, you know, how many kids love that time being all together for 1 week? And they love it. And again, those are important times for them to spend together. And if you approach youth ministry where I don't really have time or, you know, we just do an activity every once in a great while, you know, you don't have those bonds develop and you don't have that opportunity to help them grow closer together, closer to God, and closer to the congregation. And again, there's no way around this one. And I know I'm telling you something most of you know. It makes sense and it's very obvious. But when you establish a bond of Christian friendship among youth, it really helps. It should help the whole congregation. I don't know how much time you spend letting the congregation know if you have a real active youth work, letting the congregation know what the youth, young people are doing. But I think it also helps to energize the congregation and let them know that the young people of the congregation are very active in what they're doing. And I know Weber Ode, I think it excites the older members to know they're coming to events like this, or that they spend time at camp, or they're involved in Bible Bowl, whatever the congregation might be involved in. So spending that time together is important. We closed last night with a passage over in Acts chapter 2, verses 42 through 47. I'm going to read that again so I know some weren't here. This is the early church. It says they devoted themselves, this is out of the ESV, to the apostles' teaching, to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and prayers, and awe came upon every soul, and many wonders were being done through the apostles, and all who believed were together, and they had all things in common. They were selling possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved. What really stands out there about the closeness of our brethren in the first century? You know, one thing is they spent a lot of time together. And they didn't only do it as they worshiped God on Sunday. Obviously, they spent time together throughout the week. And sometimes we really do get so busy with other things in life that that's something that we're lacking. And so, you know, it's always good when especially young people like to, I believe, you know, establish those bonds of friendship and spend time together. I mentioned that last night. You know, how many young people do you see in your communities that are out there hanging out everywhere you can imagine? Well, our young people at church really strive for those kind of bonds and those friendships they can get. And hopefully they get that within the local congregation or within other congregations in the area. And those are good times that they can have. If you think about Jesus and his disciples, and we pointed this out a little bit last night, they spent up to 3 years together. And from what we know, they were very close. All the disciples were close with one another. And we find little bits and pieces of where they had disagreements with each other. Can you think of a couple instances where that took place? Where they actually had a little, they were indignant toward some. Remember that? When was that?
Mark and Barnabas.
Yes. Okay, all right. And what about when the mother asked for some of them, right, to be at his right hand? Remember? They were indignant, it says. So anyway, you know, the point is, they were so close, they could have little spats and disagreements, and they still loved each other and cared for each other. Does that happen within your families? Oh, yeah, right? If you have more than one kid, you know how that is, right? You know, you can sometimes disagree and sometimes get a little upset with each other, but you love each other as a family. And really, that can happen within a youth group, too. And obviously, it happens within a close church family. You can have little disagreements and all, but if you love each other and care for each other and have those bonds of Christian friendship, you know, you get over those things a whole lot more than you would with somebody you don't know. So when we think about in the church, that's something hopefully they can get by the time they spend together. And the same men that Jesus spent time with at the end of those 3 years, we know that, you know, they flourished with by that time they spent with Jesus. He didn't instruct them like sometimes. We have those in the church that think, well, I can come together on a Sunday and that's all that I need to be involved in with my church family. And of course, it's necessary and needed and God commands us to worship Him. But don't think that the disciples got close together only by coming together for 3 or 4 hours a week. They spent a lot of time together. And we can't do that necessarily with our young people, but we can provide them opportunities to be together. And the only way to do that is by time. He began with the men that he had following him. And he said to them, follow me and I'll make you fishers of men. How long did it take him to make them fishers of men? About 3 years, till they were prepared, right? And they ended up as men that would actually die because they were so committed to Christ and the message of salvation. And but it took time. And again, to be effective in our youth work, we want our young people to develop over time, and we're kind of in unique situations in a way because we do have maybe up to 18 years with each young person to be able to help develop that in each one of them. And so we want them to develop those bonds that last through good and bad in their life. So think about how much time you spend, and you can't get around it. It just takes time, and you got to be willing to commit to that. The third thing that we'll note is communication. And this is another obvious one to all of us that are 10 years older, at least, than our young people. You ever notice the language barrier sometimes, or the way that they express themselves or say things, or how they communicate with each other? You know, how do they communicate with each other today? Young people in general. Texts are big right now, right? You know, it may change over time. They tweet a lot, don't they? That would sound funny about 30 years ago, right? They tweet a lot. I would always think of Tweety, I guess, Tweety Bird. You know, there are acronyms they use and emojis and all these things they use today. And really, not that we have to immerse ourselves in their culture, of course, but it does help, I believe, in teaching and preaching to know at least what they're dealing with in life. And sometimes we get away from that so much we don't really pay attention. Just watching the news sometimes helps. And again, not that you have to immerse yourself in all that, but to be able to include the things that they're faced with in their life in your preaching and teaching, to contrast what God's Word says, you got to be aware of it at least. You got to know what they deal with and what they're involved in, and what their friends are involved in, what they're being encouraged to do in the world today. And so that really helps, I believe, in your preaching and teaching, to at least be aware and have a clue on what's going on. In Ephesians chapter 5, verses 11 through 14, you find that Paul was obviously not oblivious to what was going on in the world of his day. He knew in this passage, he knew in the city of Ephesus, he knew what people were involved in. It was obvious to him. He didn't hold himself up in some place and just ignore culture so much he had no clue what was happening. He knew, and this is what he said to him as a result of that. He said, "Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them." And again, the only way you can even come close to exposing them is to be aware of them. And not to participate, but to be aware. He said, "For it's shameful even to speak of the things that they do in secret. But when anything is exposed by the light, it becomes visible. For anything that becomes visible is light. Therefore, it says, 'Awake, O sleeper, and rise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you.'" And so again, not involving ourselves in those things they're involved in necessarily, sinful things especially, but just being aware and including that in our teaching and preaching in the way that we encourage our young people is very important. I think you get that at places like DU when Wayne Jones is speaking. He does a great job sometimes bringing out this contrast of how this is what the world says today, but this is what Christ says today. And that's what we're studying this weekend. That would be an example of that, being aware. So again, don't be naive. And what I mean by that, don't be naive to what our young people are facing or what their friends that are in the world might be encouraging them to do. Jesus, we know, is the master communicator. And it should not surprise us because he created communication. But consider how he taught. How did he teach? Very simple methods. He asked a lot of questions in his teaching, right? But he also used illustrations. He used those questions. He used scripture, as we talked about last night. And he pointed people toward scripture. He used parables. Again, things people could understand pretty easily in the world of that day. And we can understand them today. Most of those we readily understand. And at the end of what's often called the Sermon on the Mount, over in Matthew chapters 5 through 7, this is what he said in chapter 7, 28 through 29. "When Jesus finished these sayings, the crowds were astonished at his teaching, for he was teaching them as one who had authority and not as their scribes." And I don't know how their scribes always taught back then. We didn't live back then. But I guarantee you, the practical application and the things, the way that he spoke in his teaching and his preaching, it really made what he was saying come alive. And again, he used very simple illustrations if you think about all the ways that Jesus taught. He didn't come across as one that was way up here and they understood way down here. He was able to share whatever he said in everyday common language with the people. And so Jesus knew his audience. And that's what we talked about a little last night, right? Is that as youth workers and those that teach young people, we kind of need to be aware of their level, whether it's a junior high class or whether it's a high school class, to know where they are and to be able to start there and to teach them maybe the very elementary principles of the gospel. And sometimes as they learn further, we can push them a little more to learn even more. So again, I feel like a lot of you know these things, but it's good to always go back and evaluate whether we're doing these things or not. And if we're not implementing them in our youth work. And I'll go back, not all of you were here last night, to the importance of our Bible classes. And again, one of the things that I've seen as far as some of the surveys, or I've heard of those surveys, is that don't spend so much time emphasizing only your high school Bible class. They're very important, and you got to do that. But don't forget your junior high ages. I think ladies, especially that teach younger kids, my experience is you spend a lot of time with your young kids in Bible classes. You have visuals, right? And oftentimes, and you spend a lot of time with those young kids, and that's what they get when they're young. And there's not a little child in a class, when they're in a class like that, that doesn't love Bible class, right? You think about those kids, they go home with things they give to their parents when they have handouts or little crafts they might do. And you can ask a little kid when they come out of Bible class what they learned, and they'll have a glow on their face, right, telling you what they learned. But that same kind of feeling they have when they're young, hopefully because you spend a lot of time on your middle school and your high school, they still come out and they know what's been talked about. And they still provide some excitement, and they understand what's been taught. It's not just read to them, and it's not just done haphazardly, but it's actually done with care and love and I guess some emotion too in many ways. And I've heard that a lot of churches have a hard time because they may lose those middle school young people in their love for Bible class because of some that may not be prepared. And so again, spend a lot of time really thinking about the middle school as well as you do the high school. Okay, I got a couple minutes here, right? I want to make sure I don't skip anything here. All right. One of the ideas that some in youth ministry have had is to separate young people from the rest of the congregation. You'll find some churches, even sadly among our own brethren, that separate the teenagers into a separate worship assembly and so forth. They do that on a regular basis. And again, I believe that's very dangerous. It's wrong, but it's very dangerous to do that. The local congregation should be, the young people should see themselves as part of the local congregation. And so don't separate them totally. And there are times when they can be together for a devotional or an activity such as this. But there are a lot of ways you can implement their work into the rest of the life of the congregation. You know, having times when they actually may serve the senior citizens might be a great opportunity to do that. I know my children and some of the other adults here that are from Weber Road, they're very close to some of our older members because that's been done for many years. And they've included the youth work in with the different ages. That's very helpful. I know some of the, we have a training class for our young ladies and then a training class for our young men. The young ladies, during that training class on Wednesday nights, for example, this is just one example. One of the things that they do is for the last month of that training class, they go into the young children's class and actually help teach those classes. They prepared visuals and all. So it's a good experience for them over the time they're growing up there. Every fall, they go through that kind of training class. And hopefully by the time they graduate, they're comfortable teaching a young kid's class. And again, that also allows them to get to know the young children of the congregation and also their parents. And you may have a different way of doing that, but you know, I guess the point is that Jesus wants the church to be the church and not just the older people in the church and the younger people in the church and the middle adults in the church or the, you know, those with children in the church to separate among themselves. They may have time together, but really getting them together and making sure that they're close to one another is vital and very important. And if you want to jumpstart youth ministry or youth work, it has to be stressed that young people aren't just the future of the church. They're the church of today. And they're very important members of the church. If you have young men, hopefully you allow them to participate in your worship assemblies, if they're Christians. You know, and that's not just serving on the Lord's table. Push them to lead a prayer or to lead songs. I know many of you do that. You know, push them to give short devotional messages at some point, at some time. And that's really helpful to the young men. The young ladies, there are a lot of things they can do also. And within the Bible classes and service with some of the ladies that are a little bit older and so forth. But really try to include them in the work of the church and not just as a youth group, but in other areas of work within the local congregation. And again, they're just as important as any other part of the Lord's body. And then last of all, and this kind of ties into a couple of things of all the things we've been talking about, is commitment. And when we think about commitment in the world today, you probably get a little frustrated because it's hard to find real, total commitment. You know, a common practice today is when we get tired of something, what do? Just, you know, give up on it and move on, right? And sadly, there are those that do that with their marriages. There are sometimes maybe a job, which, again, it's not wrong to change jobs. But you know what I mean. Somebody goes from one job to the other. Like sometimes a teenager might get a job at a fast food restaurant, and then every month they have a different job somewhere else. Sometimes we do that with friendships. We break those off immediately. Some have suggested we live in a pretty, they believe the word is narcissistic society. You notice that on Facebook especially? What do people do if they have somebody that disagrees with some decision they've made? They unfriend them, right? They get rid of them. I don't want those. I don't want to hear what they're saying that might direct me in the right way, I guess. And sometimes we deal with things that way. Again, there's nothing wrong with not being committed to your old car, your old house, things like that. But on the other hand, youth are really negatively affected when they see leadership and youth workers that really aren't committed to their development and growth. And so hopefully this kind of ties into the first point we made as far as the care we're supposed to have. And Jesus, we know, made it very clear to his followers that he believed and he was very committed to their development and growth. I don't know how many times when you read through the New Testament that I've thought, why did Jesus put up with these men? And some of the things that they said, some of the thoughts they had that he could read, and you know, some of the ways they disappointed him. And you wonder, well, why did he put up with all of that? And again, he saw what they could become and what he knew what they would become. And when we think about our young people, you know, try not to get too down when they disappoint you, because you never know. I found that over the years, and some of you have been working with young people long enough, the young person, boy or girl, that's probably the most difficult to deal with, later on, 20 years later, they may be a very faithful member of the Lord's church and serving God very effectively. And sometimes the one that's the easiest to deal with turns out the other way. You just never know. When kids grow up, you never know what they're going to become. And definitely, however you deal with them will help them at least to be pushed toward being faithful to God always. And so don't give up on any young person. Remember Jesus and his example, how he washed their feet, every single one of them. Did he wash Thomas's feet? Yes, he did. And we know Thomas doubted. But we also know in the same passage where Thomas doubted, from what I understand in the Greek, he made one of the strongest statements of faith when he said, "My Lord and my God," when he understood who Jesus was.
Right.
You consider, did he wash Judas's feet? Just a very short time later, what would Judas do? We know, right? He would deny him. And that's pretty incredible from our perspective, because we think, well, if we know this is going to happen, maybe we wouldn't do the same. But Jesus did. And Jesus knew it was important to have that visual image, that lasting impression, that he was totally committed to these men. And they would go out and do some great things for him in the establishment of the church. So hopefully the things we've talked about have helped, and I'm going to close up now. And hopefully the five things we talked about again, and I don't know if everybody has a unique situation wherever you might be in the Lord's church, but hopefully you can take some of these things and kind of evaluate the work that's being done in your local congregation and really think about all these things being part of it. And the areas you need to improve on them, and encourage others in doing that. But again, our young people are precious to the Lord and should be precious to us. No matter how they act, no matter how difficult they might be or how easy they might be to deal with, they're all precious to the Lord. And hopefully through our efforts as workers in our youth programs and in their local congregations, hopefully we can encourage them to always remain faithful to God. And they'll always be able to think back on their time in your local congregation as a time when there was a congregation that loved me and cared for me and wanted the best for me in every way, spiritually.